Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Chris Bowling, I asked Chris to play this coming out of the break. Zoot Suit Riot. It was on here at McFadden's down at the Power and Light District when Shane Summers and I walked in this morning, and I believe it was one of the songs in the movie Swingers towards the end when they were at a bar, and I think that was playing. So good song. Thank you, Chris Bowling, for finding that. Chris Bowling, I'll give Shane Summers a heads up. He found it. He played Zoot Suit Riot. So we got that going on a Saturday morning, hour number three here on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. As I said, we're broadcasting live from McFadden's Power and Light, right across from Sprint Center and right next to the Miller Lite Fan Fest presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB. Coverage this week brought to you in part by the Sports Medicine and Performance Center at the University of Kansas Health System, the preferred healthcare provider of college basketball at Sprint Center. Learn more at sportsmedicine.kansashealthsystem.com. They've got a great party brunch going on here at McFadden's up until 1 o'clock. And I'll just throw out, the Bloody Mary Burger, 8-ounce burger patty with Bloody Mary Mayo. Easy for me to say. That's what Shane Summers is getting. He's getting the Bloody Mary Burger, garnished with a frill pick of cherry tomato, olive, and pepperosini? Is that how you pronounce it? Pepperosini. Okay, I'll get it. So. A lot of folks have been down here since 8:30 this morning getting in on the party brunch. We've got some Iowa State fans at the three tables all around us. So Iowa State fans, KU basketball fans, if you want to, come on down and join us. Please stop by and say hello. Iowa State and KU at 5 o'clock this afternoon at Sprint Center for the championship game. All right, let's kind of recap a little bit, follow up on some of the things David Leskey talked about in that last segment, talking Royals baseball. And when Salvador Perez said a few weeks ago that he thought Brad Keller would be the opening day starter, I don't know if we were all surprised by that, but it was a little bit, caught us all a little off guard because we knew Danny Duffy was a little bit sore, but we still thought he was in line to be the opening day starter. And then Salvador Perez had to backpedal off that a little bit. The PR staff probably came in and told him you can't say things like that until the manager says it. And then Ned Yost comes out last week and said, yeah, Brad Keller's going to be the starter. So I'm totally, Chris, I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but I'm totally down with that. I think Brad Keller's earned it. Last season, he started in the bullpen, Rule 5 draft pick, and sometimes you think of a Rule 5 guy as, well, let's hide him in the bullpen for a year. We'll use him in low-leverage situations, see how he handles it. And then he performed well enough to where they put him, they gave him a couple of starts. And at that time, I had the knee-jerk reaction. He's pitching so well out of the bullpen, why not just leave him there? I went back and looked at his numbers as a starter in the minors, and he had a ton of innings as a starter, so then it started to make more sense. And as much as I might be a little bit surprised that Brad Keller would be the guy, and that was going back to the start of spring training, I'm super excited for the kid. I'm super excited for his opportunity, considering he was a Rule 5 guy last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, who else for the Royals, though? That's the real question. Like, who else? Like, other than, you know,
Junis would have been the only
other
pick.
Yeah, I mean, Junis, but, I mean, he kind of tailed off at the end of, you know, he kind of had that, you know, mid-season, you know, struggle last year, kind of picked it up at the end, but Brad Keller going down the stretch last year was your most consistent pitcher, and, I mean, if you want to see if he is a capable, you know, number, realistically, I see him as like a number two, number three kind of guy, not a guy that's going to carry your, you know, starting pitching. But really, I mean, with, you know, Danny Duffy's shoulder issue, you know, you Junis, you'd hope can return to that early season, you know, form from last year where he was pitching, you know, phenomenal in like May, I believe, in June even. So hopefully that's what you'll see out of them. But then after that, it's like it's kind of slim pickings in terms of, you know, consistency and what you're going to get from a, you know, you know, maybe the 4 and 5 for the Royals. So we'll see going forward how it all shapes out.
Well, I think we're all, I think we've been there for a year or two now. We're resigned to the fact that this team is not going to compete for a playoff spot in 2019, maybe not in 2020, but maybe it's 2021 is where we should have our target. But you mentioned some of those starters that I'm excited to see. I want to see Jorge Lopez, too. I want to see if he can put it together over a full season, because he did some exciting things last year, and he's having a pretty good spring training. And he's kind of one of those under-the-radar guys, but I'm excited to see what he can do over the course of a season. And that, I think that's where I am as a Royals fan, as well as someone who covers the team, but where I am as a fan is I'm just excited to see what we get over the course of a whole season from some of these young guys. It doesn't matter if, you know, if they win 65 games, 72 games, 80 games, whatever. I don't have high expectations, and I do want to see them win and have success, but I just want to see I'm more excited about the individual performances we could see this summer for the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, and I was talking about that maybe last week or the week before. It's really not about the overall what the team does as a whole in terms of what they do and, you know, where they finish in the division. Are they going to be, you know, 500? Because they are definitely, in my opinion, not going to be 500. No. But you look at you want the maturation of Mondesi to go well. You want to see Witt continue to, you know, hit the ball, steal bases, and, you know, be a dynamic player wherever he's put, whether it be, you know, they've been testing him out in right field or whether he's playing, you know, in the middle of the infield. You want to see Martin Maldonado, you know, get a camaraderie with some of these young pitchers and continue to, you know, be kind of a guiding presence, you know, behind the plate that, you know, Salvador Perez was. So there's a lot of things to look forward, you know, if, you know, Jorge Soler is healthy. He's shown some glimpses of power in spring training, and you know, his swing looks good right now. So, and there's a lot of things that if you want to pick and choose, you can look forward to on a night in, night out basis for the Royals.
Yeah, and on Jorge Soler, look, I don't think he's going to be in right field. I think he's going to be the DH. Or he's going to be in a platoon situation at DH, maybe a little bit in right field. If Jorge Soler is a right fielder to start, he won't make it 50 games. He just won't. His track record's not there. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be harsh. I hope he has all the success in the world. But he's starting to be a little Juan Gonzalez-ish. Only count on me for 40 or 50 games, and that's about all you're going to get. And I'm not sure Juan Gonzalez's injuries were all that real anyway. I'm just being honest with you here. Jorge Soler's injuries are real, but he cannot play right field every day. He just can't, and the Royals know it. That's why they signed 50 outfielders this offseason. They know he can't play.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why they, you know, went out, got Billy Hamilton, and, you know, are putting other guys and seeing what they can do in the outfield, because they don't trust that, you know, Soler can stay healthy, as you said.
Yeah, Chris Owings, who's going to play everywhere. He's going to be the super guy. Maybe Whit Merrifield will play out there. Maybe Jorge Bonifacio is going to be in right field, although he has options left, so he goes down. Brett Phillips could play a little bit, but he's got options. He might start down in AAA as well.
Yeah, I mean, Brett Phillips, love the guy, love his energy.
Yep.
It's the hitting's just not there. He has not shown any glimpse that he can, you know, bat, who can go to the plate and, you know, get you a hit, or even, you know, throw a bunt down once in a while to, you know, get on base, because he does have some speed.
Who was it? Who was the outfielder 2 years ago that was just crushing home runs in spring training? I'm drawing a total blank. He was a big kid. He was super nice. He had been with the Diamondbacks and maybe did a short stint with the Yankees or Marlins. Drawing a total blank. But I was down at spring training, it was 2 years ago, and this kid was just raking. I mean, batting practice every day, just 450-foot bombs, and he did well the first few weeks of spring training, and then he really tailed off, and eventually...
Are you talking about Peter O'Brien?
Yes, Peter O'Brien, thank you.
Jed Marshall, Jed Marshall.
Jed Marshall.
Hitting us up with that info.
Yes, thank you, Jed Marshall, I could not remember Peter O'Brien, but... I remember watching his batting practice, and the sound off the bat was just he was hitting the baseball with a sledgehammer. And look, batting practice is one thing; you're getting 60 mile an hour, you know, lob jobs in there. You're not seeing 96 mile an hour breaking stuff. But he was crushing it, And he had a you know, a couple of good weeks in the games in spring training, and then he really just fell off the cliff like he always did and found himself out of the organization. And that's why he's never been able to stick in the major leagues. I hope Jorge Soler is not heading down that same road. I think he's a much better hitter overall. I just, you know, with the injuries, though, and things that have happened, I don't have that confidence. I just don't.
Yeah, I mean, you have every reason to have skepticism, just like every other Royals fan, you know, looking at Soler and, you know, not being confident, even the Royals clubhouse not being confident that he can piece together a, you know, full season of being healthy, maybe have a few, you know, a week or, you know, two here and there where he's not, you know, in the lineup as much because he's, you know, hampering with an injury. But they need some consistency in the outfield. And I know, you know, Ned loves to platoon and, you know, shift guys around, you know, kind of tinker with the lineup as well. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting season. I mean, really all the hype right now, even, you know, especially after the AFC Championship, it's really been Chiefs. But, you know, now as spring's starting to come around, you know, the weather hopefully has started, you know, will stay and get better. I think people are starting to get, you know, a little baseball fever and getting, you know, especially with 12 days till opening day, it's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, can't believe it's 12 days. By the way, thank you, Jed Marshall, for tuning in. Jed was the producer on this show for, the last year and a half when I was doing shows and Josh was doing shows. And now he got the big promotion. He's on Seren Show, the program now. So with Chris taking over. So, Jed, thank you for listening. And I know there's some people doing spring break this weekend, right? Starts for a lot of schools around here. So the Chiquellos, who I know are on the road, hello to you guys. My good friend John Fox, I know he and Tammy are probably listening this morning. So let me also throw this out about the Royals, because I've been telling my friend John about this, about Raul Mondesi turned Adalberto Mondesi. I've been talking to John about the kid for 5 years. I think the first season, maybe the second season I saw him in spring training, he was, 17, 18 years old? He was just a kid. And so I would go out and watch him take batting practice on the backfields with the minor leaguers. And I would always call back and say, John, you're not going to believe this Mondesi kid. He's phenomenal. He's raw. He's very, very raw, but he's phenomenal. And the player he reminded me of the most in terms of the Royals' past is Carlos Beltran. Because Carlos Beltran, for guys who I covered, Carlos Beltran was the best, most gifted, natural, all-around athlete to play for the Royals. I did not get to cover Bo Jackson, okay? So let me tell you that. But guys who I have covered, you talk about Mondesi, switch hitter, guy running the bases. He's got power, plays a premium position in shortstop. Beltran was a center fielder. And I guess where it really kind of hit me, and this is a small thing when you're watching players at spring training work out, but I always like to see the guys in batting practice when they run the bases, because your first round through, you run the bases. You round first, you go to second, round second, and they do it in a different order. But watching Adalberto Mondesi glide around the bases, not only was he fast, he, much like Carlos Beltran, he made it look effortless.
Effortless, yes.
He was gliding around the bases. And that's when it clicked to me. I'm like, this kid is the next Carlos Beltran. Doesn't play the position. Maybe he won't put up the kind of numbers or have a Hall of Fame career. In my opinion, a Hall of Fame career for Carlos Beltran. Might not have that. But damn, is he gifted. And this season, it popped in my head when I took the streetcar here in downtown Kansas City. I parked down at Union Station, took the streetcar here to Sprint Center and the Power and Light, and I saw Raul Mondesi on the side, and they've got him sliding into a base. And I just could not – you talk about individuals I want to see. I cannot be more excited than to see what Mondesi could do for the Royals this season.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, in the games that I've seen so far in spring training, I mean, just in the middle infield itself, the range he has, you know, it just looks, as you said, effortless in the middle infield for him and the plays that he makes. And, you know, he seems like a guy, if he is focused, you know, and doesn't lose attention, you know, play to play, like, he's a guy that, you know, a lot like on the defensive side that Elcides Escobar was, you know, in his, you know, prime with the Royals in terms of the range, you know, the types of plays that he is, you know, able to make. I think Adalberto can do the exact same thing and be a better hitter at the plate.
You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. We are broadcasting live from McFadden's Power and Light District, right across from Sprint Center and right next to Miller Lite Fan Fest, presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB. A good party brunch going on down here until 1 o'clock. The Bloody Mary Burger, which Shane Summers is getting here shortly. The quesadillas and eggs. The Fruity Pebble French Toast. Mimosa Fruit Salad. All kinds of great stuff. So get on down here as we get ready for Kansas and Iowa State. More coverage continuing at 2 o'clock with Joshua Briscoe. Live from down here at Power and Light, and that gets you right into KU and Iowa State at 5 o'clock. We'll transition a little bit here to the Chiefs before we go to college basketball. We talked about the news this morning. Tyreek Hill and his fiancée are being investigated, the possible child abuse. The reports are varying as to what allegedly happened, possibly a broken arm for a four-year-old child, possibly bruising. We don't know the whole story. Apparently there have been a couple of incidents in which the police were called to the home on Schweitzer Avenue. The first one was not prosecuted. The second one is currently under investigation. And it's, you know, it's potentially tragic. Like I said, we don't know what happened yet, but if this stuff is true, it's tragic. It's a guy in Tyreek Hill who was given a second chance after he did something awful in college. He choked his pregnant girlfriend. He was given a second chance by the Kansas City Chiefs. And if some of this is true, we don't know all the facts yet. He and his fiance are both cited in the second report. The second report. So we'll have to see where the investigation goes, but...
And it's interesting neither of them, I believe that there's nothing evident in terms of, sorry, the phone's ringing back here, but there's nothing evident that says who the reporting party was. That hasn't, that hasn't been disclosed.
Say.
And I don't think that, from what I've heard, that either the fiance or Tyreek were the ones who were the reporting party, if I read that correct in the report.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be interesting, you know, going forward to see, you know, how this all comes out, how the Chiefs handle it. I don't know. It's kind of like at a loss for words because it just came so quickly in the news yesterday, and everyone is, you know, making reactions on, you know, social media, you know, trying, you know, jumping to conclusions when you can't do that. The fact,
right.
There's not enough facts. There's still an ongoing investigation. So let it play itself out, because it's especially, you know, on social media with people, you know, just reacting just to the first headline instead of actually doing some investigation and going in and reading into it. That's what I think is the most frustrating thing for me.
Yeah, and when I use the word tragic just a minute ago, what I'm talking about is the child. To me, I could care less. If Tyreek Hill is with the Chiefs, not with the Chiefs, plays football again, doesn't play football again, none of that stuff matters to me. I mean, there's a four-year-old child involved here, and that's where our concern should be. There's been some other Chiefs news also in the last few hours. Chris Conley, free agent, no longer with the Kansas City Chiefs. He has signed a deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So the Chiefs lose a wide receiver who, let's be honest about it, we all like Chris Conley, right? He makes movie videos. He's a fun guy. He's a thoughtful person. Whenever he talks to the media, the way he talks about the game, the way he talks about life is it's informative. I'll say that. I like talking to Chris Conley. Really like talking with him. But let's be honest about it. He's not a great wide receiver. He's good for, you know, a couple of catches a game, maybe one catch a game, a couple of catches. And occasionally he's had a spectacular catch here and there, but nothing you write home about, nothing that's transformative, nothing that if you look at a roster, that's not the first guy you look at and say, got to take care of this guy. He's probably pretty low down on the priority list. So I'm happy for Chris Conley going to Jacksonville, gets reunited with Nick Foles so they can rework their magic when Nick Foles was a backup with the Chiefs. So Chris Conley gone, but, you know, it's the Chiefs got plenty of guys. They got plenty of guys who could fill that role. No loss. The other piece of Chiefs news involves a former Chief, Dee Ford, who was the Chiefs had put the franchise tag on him, traded him to the San Francisco 49ers for a second-round pick, which I thought was a decent spot. So now Therese Paylor from YahooSports.com has the details on his contract, and it may not be as big as initially thought. I think it was speculation was he's now going to have generational money. He's going to make $50, $60, $70 million, but it's not exactly as big as what we kind of thought. So per Therese Paylor, YahooSports.com, the overall deal, and this is what the agent wants you to see, 5 years, $87.5 million. Chris, I think you would agree that sounds like a big number, right? 5 years, $87.5 million?
Yeah, that is a lot.
Okay, that's the headline-grabbing number. Here's what Therese Paylor reports is actually more of the deal for Ford. It's essentially a one-year deal with $19.75 million for 2019, and then a second-year veteran deal for $13.6 million. And that's not even guaranteed that second year. So essentially, it's a one-year deal for just under $20 million. For me, that's generational money. I get that. But this is not as big as I think what a lot of us thought. And at $19.75 million, if that's the only part guaranteed, I'm kind of thinking maybe the Chiefs should have stuck with that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's all up for, you know, interpretation on how you, know, look at the cap and how much value you think that he had. So, I mean, it's all up for interpretation. Certain people are going to say, you know, you should have kept him, or, you know, other people are going to say, you know, clear the cap space. So we'll see going forward, you know, how it plays out. And, yeah, I'm interested to see how it all goes down.
Yeah, so Dee Ford, essentially 1 year, $19.75 million, and the rest of it will either be renegotiated or have to be renewed, whatever the San Francisco 49ers decide. The other news that came out is the defensive back from the Eagles, who had been in town this week for the physical and the visit, has re-signed with the Eagles. Ronald Darby. Kind of. Thank you, Shane Summers, for saving me on that one. I've had a couple of. I'm distracted because I'm at McFadden's, and there's a guy digging in the bushes out front here, which is distracting. So. Yeah, so he's re-signed with the Eagles, is not going to be a Chief. We don't know, you know, did his physical not look good? Did he not like the numbers the Chiefs gave him? So Ronald Darby is now back with the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Chiefs will be visiting with other players, defensive ends and defensive backs and everybody else. We will take a quick timeout. You are listening to Sports Saturday. We are broadcasting live from McFadden's Power and Light District right across from Sprint Center, right next to the Miller Lite Fan Fest presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB. Again, get down here to McFadden's for the party brunch, which goes until 1 o'clock. You can try out some of those breakfast nachos, breakfast quesadilla. Shane Summers just got his Bloody Mary burger delivered. You got some bacon on there? You got a jalapeno on there? Pepper seedy, okay. So come on down and try it all out. Again, at McFadden's at the Power and Light District. Coming up next, we're going to speak with Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. Lives here in Kansas City. He's covering the Big 12 tournament and had a big story this week about Kansas basketball and football, both currently under NCAA investigation. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolick is back at the studio running the show. Shane Summers is enjoying his Bloody Mary burger here at McFadden's. And you're listening to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. My name is Brad Porter. We are broadcasting live from McFadden's Power and Light District in downtown Kansas City, ahead of the Big 12 Championship. Kansas and Iowa State at 5 o'clock. Special pregame starts at 2 o'clock with Joshua Briscoe. But again, we're at McFadden's. Come down here and join us. Say hello and enjoy the party brunch up until 1 o'clock. The Bloody Mary Burger, the... What was it? Chilaquiles and eggs, a fruity pebble French toast. I'm trying to read this while I'm walking here back to my seat. Mimosa fruit salad, grits with spicy shrimp and andouille sausage, breakfast nachos, breakfast quesadillas. So check all that out at McFadden's. And again, all that goes until 1 o'clock. McFadden's across from Sprint Center, right next to the Miller Lite Fan Fest, presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB. In just a minute, Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com will join us. We'll talk a little college basketball. We'll talk on the court and off the court things. Dennis had a story come out this week about the Kansas basketball, men's basketball, and football programs, both now under investigation by the NCAA. We all knew about the basketball. This is all part of the Adidas story and which players were possibly getting money, which coaches were possibly arranging payments for which players to get money. All the layers of the onion are being peeled back. There have been convictions of Adidas officials already. We've got a suspension of the LSU basketball coach and Will Wade. Sean Miller basically gave his goodbye speech after the Arizona game last week. So there are a lot of things going on. The parts that surprised me was the football program, because, I mean, why on earth would you think Kansas football was involved in anything untoward or illicit based on the performance for the past, I don't know, 10 years? But there may be, what may have led to this, and we don't know yet, it's all being investigated, is David Beatty is accusing the University of Kansas of trying to welch on the $3 million buyout. Kansas and their AD Jeff Long, who, and he's great, he's doing a good job, said no, that's not the case. But apparently what David Beatty is saying, that the school is investigating things that may have gone on with an assistant coach within the football program. And to enlighten us further on this is our friend Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. Dennis, I apologize for not saying hi to you at the Big 12 tournament this week, but every time I was trying to wave, you were talking with somebody that was more important than me. So
no,
I just kind of stayed in the background.
I apologize to you because I passed you many times and meant to say hi. So we'll get together. We're together now.
Yes. Well, if I was on my way to get some popcorn, I apologize, because I may have had a one-track mind on that thing. So, Dennis, kind of help me out here with KU basketball and football both being under investigation right now. The basketball stuff I get. The football stuff kind of started in a weird way, and I'm not sure how it metastasized. KU owes David Beatty $3 million, but I guess they started doing some digging around, and an assistant coach may have done something, and David Beatty's been questioned about this, according to the story. So kind of get me up to speed here. What exactly is going on with David Beatty and football? I would never have thought KU football would be in a place to be investigated.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this came out in the lawsuit that was made public this week when the lawyer made these disparaging comments. We all know what they were. But said within the lawsuit that David Beatty had been interviewed, and I immediately emailed the lawyer, and I said, interviewed by whom for what? And it said, an NCAA investigator. That's interesting. And then subsequently, he puts out a statement and says why they're withholding the money, why it's an escrow. And during exit interviews, an assistant coach, it was discovered an assistant coach may have violated NCAA rules. So that's what it is. I don't have any insight as to what it is. I've been doing some digging. It could be something minor, but if they're withholding $3 million, I don't know if it's minor.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. And you know, the folks at KU are saying no, this is not. They're not trying to get back at David Beatty, but David Beatty's kind of playing this like, what did he say? They were looking for I apologize for saying this on the air, but it's what David Beatty said, that he accused KU of trying to find a dead hooker somewhere?
The lawyer said that.
The lawyer said that. Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, Dennis, of all the absurdities in college athletics, this has to rank up there.
Yeah, in one sense, no matter what happens here, it's typical lawyer bluster. You know, there's, I tried to contact the lawyer. Who said that? Was it recorded? Do you know that? And I don't find any evidence. This is contemporaneous. That, you know, they put it in quotes, you know, a dead hooker in a closet. Well, who said that? That they were trying to find trumped up charges on David Beatty. So that alone just looks like a typical lawyer bluff, where they try to sell their lawsuit. It creates a stir. But again, I don't know how this is going to, which way this is going to go, but I don't know where that came from.
We're speaking with Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, who has this story about Kansas basketball and football both under investigation. The other side of that is the basketball program. And I believe you tweeted out last night during the KU-West Virginia game that fans were chanting in favor of Silvio De Souza, who I don't think is ever going to play another minute for the University of Kansas, but the fans were certainly chanting their support last night.
No. To be clear, it was a drunk loser.
Oh, okay.
Who was creating a stir and almost got kicked out of the place.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yeah, he was in the front row by himself. You know, hard to believe a drunk guy yelling at a basketball game is by himself.
Wow.
And it didn't yelling. We were all sitting there on press row just shaking our heads like, really? They're up by 20. What? And he starts chanting, free De Souza, the NCAA sucks. And I'm going, and I'll tell you what, Udoka and Silvio were actually laughing on the bench because that's another thing to talk about. It was so quiet in Sprint Center last night. They could hear it. And then in one brief moment, Silvio looks up and kind of tips his hat, you know, and says, thank you. And he was smiling. But the guy was way out of line and was too loud, and they almost kicked him out. So it wasn't an organized effort.
So it was unusually quiet at Sprint Center last night for Kansas and West Virginia. So I guess it could be a couple of factors. I don't want to drill down too deep into this. But, you know, Kansas having not won the regular season championship, breaking 14. So maybe there's not a lot in there. They already know they're going to the tournament, so maybe the excitement's a little bit down. Also, it's West Virginia and their fans. It's a long way for them to go. They're probably not coming here. So the atmosphere was a little bit weird last night, but I'm going to guess today is going to be decidedly different with Kansas and Iowa State. In fact, here at McFadden's, there's Iowa State fans already, getting ready.
Yeah. Happy hour is any hour with Iowa State.
Yes. Yeah. I look forward to the matchup because – going into this tournament, there's always this conventional wisdom, and I don't know if it's conventional, but there's always this talk, and I engage in it as well, that, you know, Kansas is not really interested in winning the Big 12 tournament. I don't know if I believe that or not, but, you know, they've already won the regular season, and this is just kind of the show getting ready for the NCAA tournament. But I said going in, I thought for Kansas this would be big, especially for those freshmen who have been starting. They haven't won anything yet. They haven't won any trophies. They haven't won anything of importance yet. And if they could come to Kansas City, win three games, get a Big 12 tournament championship, I think that would be a heck of a confidence boost going into the NCAAs.
Oh, I think it would be huge. I mean, look, it's already on them that the streak ended. You know, all those players, it's on them. Because we've heard all these stories about veterans coming back and saying, don't let it be on you. And I'm not talking about this year. I'm talking about years gone by. It's gone 14. Don't you be the class. Don't you? Well, it's already on them. I think it would be a huge feather in their cap and a big boost to the confidence, like you said, if they won the conference tournament, because they haven't really done anything yet. Finished third in the Big 12. They underachieved, but I'm not blaming them. We all know why, you know, the main reason why. One guy suspended, one guy left and never came back, another guy's out for the year. So, you know, it is what it is. I think the credit here goes to Bill Self. He's done one of his better coaching jobs starting four freshmen. And really, to me, an All-America-like season by Dedrick Lawson, when you're averaging a virtual double-double, how many players are there like at a high major? Okay, Zion. Okay, well, that's pretty good company.
Yes.
You know, so I think that's an All-America-like season while these freshmen have come along. And then, finally, you get out of Quentin Grimes, if you expected all season last night, 129 days since he debuted against Michigan State with 21 points, and everybody said, here we go. So, no, I think this would be huge. And, yeah, I don't know if the expectations are high in the tournament. They've done this so many times before. It's the fourth consecutive, so it would have been for West Virginia, it would have been the fourth consecutive year in the championship game, believe it or not. But Kansas is used to being here. Iowa State is, I dare say, maybe louder, have a few more people there just because they're Iowa State. And they're going to be greased up all day. So, no, I think it's going to be great entertainment.
We're speaking with Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, who's been covering the Big 12 tournament here in Kansas City all week. You know, Dennis, I thought the first 2 days of games, I was pleasantly surprised at how good the two games on Thursday were. And then the games yesterday were all great, although Kansas, you know, kind of put it away early in that second half against West Virginia. But I was pleasantly surprised at how competitive these games were. And I think it's just a reflection of the season. This Big 12 season was up in the air until the final week and a half.
Yeah, it really was. And that was the selling point this season, when there was no real dominant team. Obviously, K-State and Texas Tech tied for the title. The traditional winner, Kansas, finished third. But you saw it play out on the court, where West Virginia got as far as they did. Bob Huggins showed why he's a great coach. He was milking that thing for all it's worth. They had a couple of players suspended, another transferred. The leading scorer, Kanape, was a game-time decision again, didn't play, the big shot blocker. They were without all that. And somehow, but that front line is Dan and Pose and Culver and Haley. Those guys up front were physically imposing. I think they're going to be pretty good next year. The team I was disappointed most in, I guess, was Texas, where they had everything to play for. They absolutely had to win, and it just didn't against Kansas. Jackson Hayes is a lottery pick, really? A one and done, really? He played whatever minutes he played, 20 minutes, a couple points. So, and then Roach was not very good after coming off his second. I was disappointed in Texas.
I think I'm in the same boat. One quick thing on West Virginia. When I was in the hallway, it was either Thursday or Friday, and West Virginia came in off the bus. They walked by, and I was like, holy smokes. And I know you don't want to fall into the trap of the team that looks good getting off the bus, but man alive, were those guys big.
This is just a dip for Huggy Bear. Second worst season of his career, he was. Maybe the worst, I don't know, 13-19 in 2012-13, quickly came back up with West Virginia. And I suspect they'll be back in competition for national honors next year. But you're right, to see those guys up close. And, you know, they did beat Kansas, so, there's something to be said for that. But then they end up losing 20 games, right?
Yep. Dennis, I also agree with you on Texas being so disappointing. And what I cannot figure out is, you know, his teams at VCU, he never won a conference title at VCU, which I know Nate Bucati points out all the time. But he had a decent brand of basketball. They were just kind of hell on wheels at VCU for 40 minutes. And I don't know if it's a product of he's recruiting the type of players that he thinks are supposed to be at Texas, big, athletic, and that sort of thing. And maybe he doesn't know how to coach them, or maybe he's just not ready for the big stage yet. I cannot put my finger on why Shaka Smart has not been able to make it work at Texas.
Yeah, you're right. I think a lot of talking to the beat writers there, they're the same way. He was absolutely the right hire. You know, he was the number one hot guy when he was hired at Texas. You know, he'd done that, gone to Final Four at VCU. Had produced players, had this havoc style of play, which it looks to me like he can't play at a high major. You know, it's a great way to get even when you're a mid-major, but you just can't recruit to it when you're at a power conference school, because, you know, those one-and-dones aren't going to come there and run 94 feet all around the floor. He's had three straight one-and-dones and zero NCAA wins to show for it, to the point that Texas finished 16-16 this season. And in his career at Texas, Shaka Smart is 60-60. Absolutely 500.
Yeah, and that doesn't fly at Texas, especially when they see their former coach down the road at Tennessee, who's probably going to get a really good seed for the NCAA tournament. We're speaking with Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. He's been covering the Big 12 tournament all week in Kansas City and will again today. So let's kind of end it there with the championship game tonight. If Kansas plays like they did in the second half last night against West Virginia, I think it's a pretty easy way for them to get a win. But Iowa State's been playing well. They've been hitting their three-pointers, which has kind of been the knock on them all season. If they don't hit the threes, they're not going to win, and their defense is kind of lousy at times. But I think it's the two teams playing the hottest right now, not necessarily the two best teams.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Kansas has a matchup problem with Iowa State, and obviously they suffered one of their worst losses of the season at Iowa State. If Iowa State's hitting their threes, look out, because the Jacobson kid went for, 8-16 yesterday? And he's
a
Nebraska transfer. You're telling me he couldn't play at Nebraska? That's the reason Tim Miles is getting fired. I mean, what team wouldn't want, a kid like that just mucking it up in the middle, going to give you maybe a double-double or a low double-double every game? And Shayok is fantastic player of the year. Wigginton. So I like Iowa State. I think they're going to dominate Sprint Center, and I think they're going to win the game because I don't think Kansas is there yet. But, let's see how everybody slots out in the tournament. Who knows?
Hey, Dennis, I appreciate your time so much. I know it's been a busy week for you. I think every week's a busy for you, considering how much you have to cover. But I know it's a busy week here in your hometown in Kansas City. So I appreciate you taking the time to join us and enjoy the sunlight on this Saturday afternoon in Kansas City. It's back.
Great. I owe you a popcorn, Brad. Thanks.
Oh, thank you very much, Dennis. Appreciate it. That is Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. Always good stuff. You can read his stuff there, including that story that came out this week on Kansas football and basketball, both currently under investigation. The football story is a little bit weird to me, but we can talk about that in the next segment. We're coming up on a timeout here. You're listening to Sports Saturdays. We broadcast live from McFadden's Power and Light District, downtown Kansas City, right across from Sprint Center, right next to the Miller Lite Fan Fest, presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB. Come on down and check out the party brunch. It goes until 1 o'clock, so still plenty of time to get down here. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show back at the studio. Shane Summers is making sure everything is working just right. And you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. My name is Brad Porter. We're broadcasting live from McFadden's Power and Light District, downtown, right across from Sprint Center, right next to Miller Lite Fan Fest, presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB. We got Iowa State fans down here. We got KU fans down here enjoying the party brunch, which goes until 1 o'clock. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show back at the studio. And, Chris, just a couple of things real quick to correct myself, as fans listening gave me a couple of notes on Twitter. So let me correct one thing about Tyreek Hill first. From Twitter account called Pez Mahomes. Tyreek Hill was named in the first report that was in early March, but not the second report. So, again, just going to wait to find out what comes out. But, yes, you are correct for the listener. Working on location, it's hard to keep everything together sometimes, but you are correct. Tyreek was in the first report, not the second report. And another one of my followers who I think – likes me pretty much, complained because I compared Peter O'Brien and Jorge Soler. Though I'm not saying they're the same player, so let me just clarify this here. Jorge Soler is a much better player than Peter O'Brien, and I said that. What I'm worried about, or the comparison I was making, is power hitters who don't turn out. Has Jorge Soler put together a full major league season that leads you to believe he's going to be the star the Royals thought they were getting? No. And that's fine. I hope he turns out well. But I was not comparing Peter O'Brien and Jorge Soler in terms of overall talent. Outfielders who hit for power, who so far have not panned out. So, Chris, let's kind of wrap on this, finishing up with what Dennis Dodd talked about. We only have a couple of minutes left. I'm talking about KU and Iowa State tonight. And I thought it was interesting that and accurate, Dennis said that Iowa State's a matchup problem for KU. And Iowa State, Bill Self even said last night, Iowa State's probably going to have more fans at Sprint Center tonight, which will be interesting to see. But potential to be, if it's anything like the first 2 days of the tournament, aside from last night's KU-West Virginia game, this game could be just rocking and explosive.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I'm excited to see how KU matches up with, Matt Robinson. Their ISU's post player. I believe he was a transfer. I think it was from the Big Ten school. I'm not positively sure. But he has killed KU this year. And if he, you know, tries to play, you know, around three-point line, what are they going to do with Dave McCormick? You know, if they try to bring him out on the perimeter, I think it's going to be an interesting matchup right there. And I think Iowa State's backcourt is better than KU. So we'll see how that whole matchup is and how they deal with that.
Well, I was specifically, and you let me know how much time we have left, Chris. I was specifically watching McCormick last night against West Virginia. We're under a minute to go here. So I was watching McCormick last night, and I like the way he kind of stepped out to the perimeter, put a hand up, and quickly dropped back inside to get back on those perimeter players for West Virginia. McCormick, he's come a long way, let's say that, since the beginning of the season. All right, we are out of time for this edition of Sports Sunday. Thanks to Chris Bullock back at the studio. Thanks to Shane Summers for setting everything up. Thanks to our guest, Aaron Torres from The Athletic, who was awesome. David Leske from Baseball Perspectives talking to Royals. He was great. Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. Awesome. And again, the party brunch goes at McFadden's until 1 o'clock. We will see you next time. My name is Brad Porter, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.